You're listening to Mystic Lounge with Alan B. Smith. Rebroadcast on the Onyx Network. Thursdays at 11 p.m. Pacific. Fridays at 2 a.m. Eastern.
Back everyone to Mystic Lounge. This is Alan B. Smith, your most grateful host, and today I have a wonderful guest with me. I'm very excited to bring on. Her name is Samantha Fay, and she is the author of The Awake Dreamer, and she is also the podcast host of Psychic Teachers and Enlightened Empaths. And she is focused on teaching people to embrace their true gifts. Her goal is helping people see their connection to spirit. And she has been an intuitive for 15 years. So we're going to speak to Samantha in just a moment. As a friendly reminder for all of you who love coffee as much as I do, as their own spiritual talisman, please go to aliencoffeebean.com, check out Alien Coffee Bean Coffee Roasts, and you can use our discount code, 20% discount code. That is mystery, all caps, 20. So when you check out, put in mystery 20 for the 20% discount code for Alien Coffee Bean. And thank you very much to Bambi for bringing that delicious roast to our home every week. Samantha, are you a coffee drinker?
I'm not a coffee drinker, but I love the name. I'm a big tea drinker.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I joke all the time about my obsession with coffee, but it is real. It's one of those things that I don't know how I can get through my day without it. So let me ask you this. We'll start off with this question. Is coffee a healthy habit if you are spiritually or inclined to grow spiritually?
I don't know if it's a healthy habit, but I'm not a big fan of saying like, oh, you can't eat this or you can't drink that or you have to add this to your diet if you want to be intuitive and spiritually. I think everything in moderation and everything balanced is really the way to go. However, if we're talking about dreams, if you do drink coffee, you know, after like dinner, it's going to inhibit your ability to recall your dreams. That's any caffeine, not just coffee.
Okay, got it. Because oftentimes people say if you drink coffee, you kind of get like more intense dreams. And then I wonder, does intense dreams mean, you know, more kick in your astral travel or not so much?
It could be that. I think what the studies have shown is that anytime you have stimulants like nicotine or caffeine after like, say, 6 o'clock, it inhibits your ability to recall your dreams, and it might, I mean, some people say that it encourages nightmares. I have not found that to be true. And if you have any depressants like alcohol at night, that also can affect the quality of your dreams. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, really, there's enough stress going on in the world. Drink your coffee. Enjoy it. Just have everything in moderation. There's a really, really good fiction book by David Liss. I think it's called The Coffee House, but it's about the history of coffee and how it came to Europe and America. You might like it.
Okay.
It's not like a history book. It's a good story.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, anyway, welcome to Mystic Lounge.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. I'm excited that you're on here as well. I read your book, and dreams is not a topic that I've covered enough on this show. But what's interesting is that it's not just about dreams, right? It's about everything from past life, memories to astral travel, parallels with near-death experiences. There's a lot packed into the dream world in the way that you approach it. So tell us a little bit about, you know, who you are and how this all began for you.
Sure. So I've always had dreams that have kind of come true or given me warnings or forecast about what's heading my way. I've always had really interesting, strange, wonderful experiences in my dreams. I always thought it was just part of being intuitive, and it wasn't until I started sharing some of these dream stories on my show and hearing from my listeners that I realized we're all having these wonderful, strange experiences while we're sleeping. And it really, really led me to research what is going on when we are unconscious, you know, because here we are sleeping and we don't really know what our consciousness is doing. And yet I feel that our soul is traveling. I really do. Not every night, but I do think that some nights when our body is resting and our mind is sleeping and recuperating, that our soul is traveling. And we might be going to the other side to meet with our guides or our angels or converse with loved ones who have gone before us, or just kind of get like a heads up about what's going on in our soul plan.
So you think literally every night, whether we're aware of it or not, our soul is going out there. What does that mean? What's
okay? I don't know if it's every night. I really don't know. Okay. And I don't think that's necessarily for, in my experience, that's not true, because I feel like some nights you just need to dream. Like a lot of dreams are just your way for your brain to process everything that's going on in your mind. And it's a, it's a way to de-stress and kind of reorganize our memories and the typical stuff we think of about normal dreams. But I think that many, many nights our soul does leave our body. So if you think about conscious astral travel, like Robert Monroe talked about, for example, in his wonderful books, you can learn to consciously project your soul out of your body. I have not been able to do that consciously through meditation, but many, many people do that. I think that sometimes when we are dreaming, our souls are leaving our body. And I think we're connected by that silver cord and we are traveling and journeying and having these wonderful experiences, you know, because as I point out in the book, we spend a third of our lives sleeping. That's a lot. 30% of our life we're sleeping. So why not, you know, become more awake and aware in that dream state and recognize that sometimes miraculous things are happening.
Yeah. Well, I do want to say that I am very much more inspired now to do more dream work, seriously, after reading the book. And especially that we're going into the holiday season, and I'm always telling myself, I need to meditate more. And so now I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to meditate and I'm going to do dream work. I've gotten like the exercise thing down pretty good. So I feel good about that, 'cause it was just something I needed for myself. So now I'm like, okay, let's try and, you know, carve that time out, a little bit of time for meditation. And so, you know, something like meditation is supplementary to the dream work as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. All of the studies have shown, and really my own experience has shown too, that whatever you're doing during the day is what's going to be reflected in your dream state. So if you're just going to work and going through the motions of life and, you know, paying bills and walking the dogs and whatnot and sitting in traffic, your dreams are going to be fairly normal. But the minute you start to engage your right brain, and that can be anything, it doesn't have to be meditation. There's so much research showing the power of daydreaming, that if we just allow our minds to wander, and this is something I've been thinking about really for like the entire year, is how little we as adults allow ourselves to daydream, especially with this little portable laptop in our hand called our phone, right? So if we're if we're sitting in a doctor's office, you know, waiting, we're not going to daydream. We're gonna open up our phone and play a game, answer emails or what have you, right? If we happen to be a passenger in a car, I feel like I'm always the one driving, but if you're a passenger in a car, as a kid, you look out the window and kind of let your mind wander. No, we're gonna be sitting there again, answering text and, you know, checking off our to-do list and whatnot. And so if you just allow yourself to daydream or meditate or do anything creative, draw, read poetry, write some poetry, do woodworking, whatever it is that makes you feel connected to that creative essence of you, that's going to greatly amplify not only your intuition, but also your dream world.
You must have been daydreaming, because you went from a career job to this and being a psychic reader. That's a leap of faith.
Yes, it was. And it was not anything I consciously chose. I just had this really wonderful spiritual awakening. It occurred in 2004. I was teaching English at my community college. I loved that job, loved those students. I was not miserable at my job at all. But I had this very interesting student, let's just call it that. And he was kind of harassing me, and he would put letters under my little notes under my door that said, "Today I went looking for your house, tomorrow I will find it." Really scary stuff. And I went to my department chair for help, and I will never forget. She said, "I want you to stop smiling so much and stop being so daggone cute, and that boy will stop bothering you." And I was like, "Oh, this is very serious." So I just started to pray about it. And I walked into my office a few days after really praying on this, and there was a rock on my desk. And I went up to our geology professor and I was like, "This rock just appeared in my office. Like, what is this?" And he said, "Oh, it's Jasper. Who do you need protection from?" And I was like, "How can a rock help me? Like, what?" I didn't understand that at all. But I held on to the rock. And the following week, the student was arrested on an unrelated charge, totally separate from the school, but ended up going to jail. And so I didn't have to deal with him anymore. And I was suddenly fascinated by crystals. And so I just started researching and reading about rocks. I got into Reiki. I got into all the spiritual stuff. And I had this mantra every day. I would say, "God, use me to do your will." And, you know, it's a long story, but one thing led to another. And through dreams, really, I had a series of dreams that eventually came true. Mm-hmm. And I realized that something more was going on. And I just kept following the signs step by step. And yeah, eventually took that leap of faith. Long answer to a short question. Sorry.
No, but that's the important part of it. Cause so many people don't know what to do. You speak about signs, right? So it's like people want to have signs. They want to have some guidance. So when they're at those crossroads in their life or approaching the crossroads, you know, what do they do to open themselves up to see those signs, and what are they looking for?
Right. Well, I do think it's important to put yourself in that position of allowing and receptivity. When I had that mantra every day, I would say, "God, use me to do your will." I didn't have any idea of what that meant or what that would look like. I had this vague notion of, "Oh, maybe I'll volunteer at a hospice and give Reiki." Like, I didn't know. And then all these things kept happening where I was being led in this direction. And it was almost magical, really, for lack of a better word. I don't know how else to explain it. And I feel like when we put ourselves in that position of receiving and allowing, that's when we can really follow the signs. Now, I'm also a big fan of giving I call them our spiritual helpers. I don't, you know, labels don't really mean a lot to me. So you can call them guides, angels, ancestors. But I do believe we all have a team of spiritual helpers. And I think that if you say like, "Oh, give me a sign," like, I'll give you an example. I was really being led to do this work and I was terrified. I was very, very terrified, not only to leave my safe, happy, comfortable job, but also of just what other people would think. You know, sure. It's kind of weird to put yourself out there that way. Oh, yeah. And so I said, I was walking home from my neighborhood book club and I said, "All right, God, if I'm really supposed to do this, you need to give me a sign." And right then I looked up and a shooting star went across the sky. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's my sign. Like, he answered. This is amazing." And 10 seconds later, I was like, "Wait a minute. Probably 4 million people across the world at that same moment looked up and saw that same shooting star. How, like, you know, self-centered to think that was for me and my sign." So I think that even when we ask for the signs and we get them, we tend to doubt them. So something I recommend is to choose a sign that's I usually say something from nature or a bird, a butterfly, a certain flower. I chose a purple flower. You know, just something that is easy and accessible for our guides to be able to manipulate with their energy and say, "If I'm supposed to do this, you know, show me a yellow butterfly in the next 3 days." And I always tell people to state a specific sign and give them a timeline too, because I think time is different over there.
That's raising the stakes to ask for a specific sign, because what if you don't get it? Then what happens?
Well, then you know that the answer is no. And it's very hard sometimes to hear that answer, but I think we need to, because not everything we want is meant for us or at that time. And so I think it's a good way to have a conversation, or at least start to open a dialogue with yourself. Why do I want this? How do I feel if the answer is no?
Yeah.
And to start to look at it that way. But I've asked for a sign and not gotten it and been like, "Okay, I guess I'm not supposed to do that right now." And it's not led me astray. Now, I think sometimes people make things fit, you know, they'll say like, they might say like, oh, show me a bird if I'm, well, you're going to see a bird, right? Or like a lot of people, where I live, the red cardinal is the state bird. And so you see cardinals everywhere. And so I'll tell people who live around here, don't ask for a red cardinal because you're going to see one. So you want to ask for a sign that's specific and fairly unique, but that you can work with.
What was your purpose for writing The Awake Dreamer?
I wanted to really expose people to this concept, this idea that is not new, but I hope I approached it in a new way, that something really unique is happening in our dreams and that we have this whole third state of our being, of our lives, that we can use to continue accessing our spirituality and our intuition, and that it's a wonderful resource. And I also wanted to normalize a lot of this too, because something I learned, I was really hesitant to share some of my, especially my precognitive dream experiences that I've had. I was hesitant to share those on my podcast because two reasons. One, I found that most people don't really like to hear people talk about their dreams. they get a little bored and their eyes glaze over, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Do you ever get a cup of coffee? Well, I don't know if guys ever do this, but I know with my girlfriends, if I get a cup of coffee or tea with a friend, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you'll never believe the dream I had last night, that they're not wanting to hear that, you know?
because dreams are so abstract and personal. So, yeah. You know, what I say sounds so interesting to me, but right. know, maybe from the listener's point of view, it's like,
Not so much.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that it's fair to say, if you're able to dissect your dream and understand what it means, I think then you're more capable of communicating that to the listener, right?
Yes.
So that they can, it's more palatable for they understand what you're talking about.
Yes. Yes. And my dreams have always been very different from most people's in that I would have dreams that I was crossing earth bounds or ghost over. I had dreams that I was offering healing. I had dreams that I was in what I call an astral school, and I was mm-hmm. learning about energy and healing and meditation. I had several dreams where, you know, they were precognitive. I dreamt that a friend was pregnant 3 months before she knew. I dreamt several things that ended up coming true. And so I started to share those on my podcast, and the response was amazing. Listeners really emailed me back saying, I have that too. I've had those experiences too. I don't know who to talk to about it. What does it mean when that happens? Is this really real? And so that's really what inspired me to write it. And I wanted to research and look at, you know, famous people all over throughout history have had these same soul travel dreams. And so I think that gives it some credence and validity.
So soul traveling has multiple functions. One, it could be healing. One, it could be guidance. Sometimes I think we all have that thought where we want to reach out to our loved ones that have passed away. And I think even for, you know, the normie, you know, if anyone's watching Wednesday on Netflix, normie is the catchphrase. And I think that it's just a natural thing to think maybe they'll come to my dream. Maybe they'll come and give me a message. And oftentimes they don't, even when you ask, but yeah. You write about this. So is there something that we might be doing wrong that they're not coming to our dreams?
I don't think it's anything we're doing wrong. What I have learned is that a lot has to be right and a lot of conditions have to be met in order for our loved ones to be able to infiltrate our dreams. So if you are in the active stages of grief, it's going to be very difficult for them to penetrate that grief. Grief puts up an energy. Have you ever been around someone who's incredibly sad? You can feel it like a cloak around sure. them, right? And so it's the same when we're dreaming, that grief never leaves us. And so it's hard for them to kind of push through that. If you are in the active stages of grief and you do want to hear from your loved one and you want them to know that, you know, they're okay and they made it, what I always recommend is you say, okay, you know, if it's your mom or your dad, you know, dad, I really want to hear from you. If you can't come in my dream, come into cousin Rita's dream. You know, it's like someone that you both know that's right. possibly family, but your cousin isn't going to be grieving your dad with the same intensity you are. So it's going to be easier for your dad to get into your cousin's dream and bring a message to you that way. So that's one suggestion. The other thing, I just lost my father in May to Alzheimer's, and I keep waiting for him to come to me in a dream, and he has not. And so that's very, very upsetting. I keep having these dreams, and I didn't share them with anyone throughout all of June and July, where he was kind of in a nursing home on the other side. And then one of my daughters, who's also very intuitive, had this dream where she was flying. She says, "Mom, I had a dream where I was flying with my angel, and I saw all these people, and they were laying in these beds of light. And these," she said, "kind of like a rainbow color of light was just shining over each person. And they were just bathed in this," like she said, "it was almost like a cloud of light around them." And she said, "I saw Papa," she saw my dad. And she said to her angel, "Oh my gosh, that's my grandfather. I have to go say hi." And the angel said to her, "You can't right now. He's still healing." And so I think very often if people die when they are in a coma, or they're in Alzheimer's, or they have some type of very long, drawn out, painful passing, it might take them a long time to acclimate to the other side. They still have some healing to do on the other side. And I know that might sound strange to a lot of people, because, you know, we're told that when you die, some people believe you're just in the ground until the second coming. Some people believe you're in the ground as fertilizer. Some people believe you cross over and you're given, you know, a harp, a halo, and a cloud mark number 9. But what I've really experienced and seen, and Emanuel Swedenborg, so many saints and mystics have validated this as well, that there's still work to be done on the other side. And so your loved one might still be acclimating to all of that, but they will come to you in a dream because they do want you to know they're okay.
When I was younger, I used to have these dreams, not often, but of flying. And in the dream, it would be like sometimes flying and like fighting some kind of foe. And like, the weird thing was, in the dream, it was like, oh my God, I figured out how to do this in reality. When I would wake up, like that feeling would fade away. And I was like, did I really figure out how to fly in reality? Or was that just a dream? Right. Cause that felt good to do. What's up with that joyriding? What does that mean for our soul when we have those really amazing experiences where we're flying or we're underwater?
I challenge you to find somebody who has not had a flying dream, right? That's how common they are. We all have these dreams. And what is so interesting is every person I have spoken to, they have this dream. They learn how to fly. They figure out they can fly. And they always say, "Oh my gosh, this is so easy. Why haven't I been doing this all along?"
Right. Yes, yes.
I think that's our way of the way our conscious mind, when we wake up, I think that's how we remember that when we're soul traveling, we are flying. Because really, if you talk to practiced astral travelers, that's how they describe astral traveling. It's flying. They leave their body and their soul just flies. And so I believe, and I know this sounds a little out there, but I really do believe that our soul is flying during the dream state.
Yeah. Is the first step to do astral travel, soul travel, lucid dreaming? Is that like an entrance way into that skill?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. And there's a lot of methods I go over in the book for learning how to lucid travel, lucid dream. I think Stephen LaBerge is the go-to, you know, the father of lucid dreaming. So I would definitely recommend his book as well. But yeah, lucid dreaming, when you learn to become awake and aware in the dream state, is really kind of the gateway to learning how to do all of these cool things we can do in the dream. A lot of people naturally lucid dream. I think the research shows about 68% of people have had at least one lucid dream naturally without even trying to. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, you are usually aware that you're dreaming when you're having a lucid dream, and you're also the participant and the observer. So you might watch yourself do something, or you might jump in and out of recognition of, "Oh, that's me," or, you know, "I'm watching myself do this." And that's another common thing with lucid dreaming. Once you learn lucid dreaming, then astral travel consciously or unconsciously through the dream state also becomes more easy.
So that qualifies as a lucid dream. You're aware that you're watching the dream and you're also in the dream.
Yes.
I've had that experience and others have too. Yeah, like you said, I always thought that lucid dreaming meant I could kind of control and like manipulate the narrative and what's going on.
It does. It does. That's like, if we're talking about, if we compare this to grades, right? Mm-hmm. A first grader might be able to recognize that they're awake in a dream, and someone in high school might be able to manipulate and change what's happening in the dream. So that is more of an advanced aspect of lucid dreaming.
So I'm in first grade.
Well, I think we all are in many ways. It's very hard to get to that aspect where you can manipulate and change the dream, but can be done.
Well, you did talk about karma a little bit, and I wonder how many levels of reality do you think our souls, live in at some point or another?
I have no idea. I really don't. I think that we are as limitless as the universe is, and I don't think we're meant to understand necessarily all the different aspects. There's a physicist I quoted in the book who said he believes dreams are really parallel life awareness, where it's just a parallel life. When we're dreaming, we're actually kind of skipping into another reality, another dimension. And it's an aspect of a different life we're living at the same time. So if we're going to talk about different dimensions of reality and then parallel lives, I mean, you know, really, who knows? We had a wonderful guest on our show, Simon Bowne of the Past Lives podcast, and he does past life regressions. And I asked him, what's the average life? You know, how many lives does the average soul that comes to you for a regression, how many have they experienced? And he said, oh, it ranges. He said, but I have researched one person who recalled 900 lives. I don't know about you, Alan, but if I had to come back 900 times, learn to walk and talk and read and write and go to middle school all over again.
Especially middle school. Right. Not enticing. Right, right. But I guess the idea there is that it's like a level of reality that we are not cut off from, but don't remember. So to imagine that seems like, oh my God, that's intense. But, you know, there is, I guess, a choice there that the soul is deciding to do these incarnations. I've always struggled with that a lot because I have a big problem. And I know you talk about it in your book, but I have a big issue with like the idea that we come into this reality with like abusive parents and, you know, abusive relationships, like, you know, everything from like the really hard stuff, you know, violence and rape and psychological abuse. And to think to that, oh my gosh, we chose that. I just can't get through that. I've dealt with addiction in the past, and I can be like, okay, maybe that's something, you know. But when you're like a direct victim of someone else, that's hard for me to.
I don't think that. Yeah, I really battle with that too. I don't think we choose everything that has happened in our life, and I think when we espouse those views, it can make someone who's been a victim of, say, a violent crime, it almost puts responsibility on them, which is so unfair and unjust. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I and again, a lot of people in the spiritual community devoutly disagree with me, but I do believe that there is good and evil in this world. And I don't mean that in like a very hardcore, you know, breaking the world into two parts, but I do believe that some people are just not nice. And I think they're just going to do not nice things. And I don't think it's a part of the plan. I think you just happen to get in their path. But I do believe that there are other things in our life, other challenges that we have carefully orchestrated to help us. And I think you can look at events surrounding those challenges. If they're recurring, if they're repetitive, for example, that's usually an indication that it's part of your challenge that you need to that your soul set up to help you grow. You know, I had I had a dream experience years ago. I used to often when I pray, it's just me kind of yelling at God, right? Like, this is really hard, or what's happening here? Mm-hmm. And I was really saying, like, okay, we're in this school called Earth, and you don't give us a manual. Like, what is that about? Like, where's the manual? Where's the map? Mm-hmm. It's not very fair to just drop us here. And I had this dream where I was talking to this little old man that often comes up in these very spiritual dreams I have from time to time. And he said, if you were taking a test and your teacher put all the answers on the board and all you had to do was look at the board and write the answers down, he said, in a year, would you remember anything you learned for that test? And I said, no, of course not, because I would have just written it on the board. And he said, well, that's why we don't have a manual here on Earth, because you have to experience it, live it from both sides in order to fully learn it and assimilate it into your soul.
Yeah, then you don't learn it, right? It's like IKEA. I might finish putting it together, but if you ask me to do it by memory, no. You know, I didn't experience it. I just followed the manual. That's a good analogy. I like that. In the book, you referenced, you know, some studies that we've heard before, like Global Consciousness Project. And then you talk about Wayne, Jonas, and Cindy Crawford, physicians who did, 2,000 reports on the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. When you...
And not the model, Cindy Crawford.
Not the model, right? Physician. When you read these studies, I mean, do you think that if they're really legit? Do you think that they did their due diligence to support their findings that indeed there's some sort of psychic phenomena occurring?
Yes, I do. And if anyone listening or watching this is thinking, well, I don't want to go and read all the, because reading studies is very, very boring. You got to go through the abstract and the double blind study and all that. A book I would really recommend to people is Dean Radin's Real Magic. Have you read that? And it talks about all the studies he and his team at the Noetic Institute have done on not only the power of prayer, but the power of intention as well. And what that can do for so many things, including coffee. They have he has a whole study in there on the power of blessing your tea or coffee before you drink it, which is really, really cool. And not only did they did a triple blind study on that one, and it did show that it absolutely does work to enhance mood and overall well-being. So yeah, and I have some stories in there, some dream stories of people who have been praying for others or praying for themselves and had some amazing healing effects that have happened. There's a story a listener sent me that has nothing to do with dreams, but it's just a story I will never forget. She was, we had done an episode on the power of prayer, and I was telling the story about how I had a hard time sleeping as a little kid, and I'd often go running into my parents' room, and my dad would always say, if you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't fall back asleep, it just means you need to say a prayer for someone. So I would just go back to bed and I'd, you know, say a Hail Mary and say, like, okay, send this out to whoever needs it. So I was telling that story and others when we were talking about the power of prayer. And this listener fell asleep that night saying prayers over and over and just saying, I'm sending this energy out to anyone who needs it. Mm-hmm. And she had this feeling that one of her friends really needed like an uplifting email. So she sent her an email telling her like, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to get better. This was like one of her best friends. She somehow mistyped one letter in the email address. And it went to a 16 or 17 year old girl who at that very moment was contemplating how and when she would kill herself. Wow. And then she gets this email from this woman that she's never met telling her, it's okay, it's going to get better. You know, you have angels around you that are going to help you through this. And so the girl emailed her back, and the two struck up a correspondence. It's a very, it's just a beautiful story that makes me emotional to think about. How could that happen? You know, how could that, just one example of the power of prayer and intention.
That's the real magic and mystery that we're all trying to kind of figure out. I mean, Ray Hernandez, who's been on the show, Dr. Bob Davis have, you know, all talked about Dean Radin. And so now I have to read his book. I've been putting it off. But
it's so good. It's an easy read. It's really good.
No, and I appreciate that because there's so much out there. There's so much good research and great authors like yourself. This just flew by. It's like, doing these shorter podcasts, it's when I have someone on like you that I can just keep talking with, you know, I love it because there's just so much shared, I think, passion for these subjects. Do you think that the proliferation of like your podcast and other podcasts on these subjects is in some way, and I'm not saying this in like a self-serving way to like try to make myself feel better about what I do, but I mean this genuinely. Is there some sort of service to humanity? Is there like something that we're giving, putting out there that is beneficial for a lot of people that maybe have not been exposed to these ideas?
I hope so. You know, I really, really do. We end every episode of our show by saying, be the light, you know, be the light for yourself and others. But we started the podcast for very selfish reasons. My friend and I were like, you know, we need to find normal, grounded people who aren't like living their life by the phases of the moon or whether Mercury is retrograde or direct and aren't, you know, screaming and yelling about. I had all these spiritual friends at the time who would yell at me if I drank a Diet Coke, you know, oh, that's so bad for your energy. And we were like, we need to find normal people who are also not that you're, you know, I don't mean any judgment, but I just felt was feeling very judged by my Christian community and also very judged by my spiritual community.
I get it. Yeah.
We were like, where do we fit? And so that's why we started this podcast, was to find like-minded people. And it really has done that. And I think that's the service, you know, I don't think it's anything we're doing or any of these podcasters. I think we're just creating space for these like-minded thinkers to come together and say, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I'm not the only strange one that thinks that or has dreamt that or has wondered about that. And I think that's the beauty of these shows.
Yeah, but the cool thing is when you're living the regular day life job, I do sometimes wonder who around here is into this kind of stuff that just doesn't share it, right? They just listen to the podcast, read books, and never like tell anybody, you know, that they're into this. It's interesting. I wonder how big those numbers are. So there's is the holiday.
A clue. If you ever see anyone wearing like a crystal necklace or the crystal string bracelets, I always strike up a conversation with people like that. And even if they're accountants or mathematicians, it always lets me know they're open to this.
That's interesting. So, okay. So if you want to secretively let someone know you're into metaphysics, wear a crystal. I love it. So we're in the holiday season. So before we go, what's your feeling about the overall holiday season, the spirit, and just leave us with that and or a final thought.
Well, I'll tell you, I really do love this season and I love that we are all celebrating so many different holidays. It's not just, you know, Hanukkah or Christmas or it's all these beautiful holidays at the same time. And I think there's such a magic in this time. I told my kids, I hope you don't have young listeners. If you do have young listeners, just fast forward for like 20 seconds. When my kids found out about Santa Claus, you know, they were so devastated. And I said, no, like Santa is real. Like there really is. And I don't mean that literally, but I mean, we are all Santa Claus. Do you know what I mean? Like we all participate in the magic of this season. And I just think it's a beautiful time where we can get kind of carried away with the spirit of giving, but also receiving and keeping that circle of gratitude going.
Yeah. Samantha, thank you so much for being on here. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. If anyone wants to find out more about Samantha, go to SamanthaFey.com. And thank you all for joining us on this holiday special episode, I will call it, Samantha. So thank you all. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is.
Yes, there's several more and they're all keeping my mind at this time.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So keep that spirit of light and love throughout the season. And please share your thoughts down below, comment, share this video with others who you think might appreciate it. And remember that this show is also rebroadcast Thursday nights at 2 a.m. on the unxnetwork.com, and we will see you all shortly with another mystical guest. This is Alan B. Smith, Living the Mystery.